Well, good morning. We'll call the June meeting of the Gambling Control Board together. I'll begin with introductions of the board, starting to my right.
Bob Harmon, board member from Raymond.
Barbara Dresser, board member from Saco.
I'm Tim Doyle, I'm board chair from Turner. Absent today are Al Schofield and Greg McNeil. They each had prior commitments. I'll next ask the executive director to introduce himself and his staff.
Good morning. With us today, we have Kathy Robitaille, who's back from surgery. We have Mallory Riley, who handles licensing. Lenny Yaskowi, who handles auditing. Vicki Gardner, our inspector supervisor. Detective Don Armstrong, Main State Police, and also is today the assistant to the commissioner, Janet Joyner.
And next up, I'd ask our assistant attorney general to introduce himself.
Yes, Ron Gay, with the attorney general's office. Katie Johnson is also here. And I'd also like to introduce, we have an intern at the attorney general's office who's been helping me do some research for cases, and that's Elena right there, so.
Okay, next up will be the approval of the minutes of the May meeting. Those were sent to the board prior to the meeting. I'd entertain a motion when somebody's ready.
I'll move it.
Motion?
Second.
So motion and a second. Any corrections or additions? Hearing none, those in favor? That's unanimous. That brings us to the executive director's report.
Mr. Chair, members, good morning. In the area of operations in May, there were 39 shipments of machines and or associated equipment shipped to or from licensed facilities. On-site inspectors completed 590 observations, 32 checklists. There were 3 minor violations being monitored from an activity log, 2 patron complaints, and we had 4 dispositions of formal reports were sent for members' review per statute, and there were 8 self-exclusions. For the month of May 2018, we identified an increase of 5% in total tax revenue for both facilities versus May 2017. Year to date, we have identified an increase of 6.5% versus last year at the same time. Oxford reported 10.1% win for the month of May from slots and 23.9% win from table games. Oxford's payback percentage for May was 89.9% with an average gross win per machine of $228.63. Hollywood reported 10.4% average win for the month of May from slots and 26.9% win from table games. Hollywood's payback percentage for May was 89.6% with an average gross win per machine of $149.06. And that is my report.
Any questions of the executive director? Seeing none, thank you. That brings us to the state police report.
Jen, good morning. My report's gonna be brief. At the casinos, we had several counterfeit bills. There were no suspects with these bills. They came in out of the count machine. They've all been turned over to the Secret Service. There were 12 thefts at the casinos. 10 of those, all the funds were recovered, and any other 2 letters have been sent and their accounts have been flagged, so hopefully we can get that back from that. For licenses investigated, there was 39 new licenses investigated, 58 renewal licenses, and 36 are still pending. And for calls for service, Bangor PD had 14. Last board meeting, I told you I hadn't received Oxford for a couple months. I've gotten in touch with a new chief, and he did report they had 18 calls for service in Oxford. And that's all I have.
What denomination were those bills?
20s, and mostly 20s.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions of the state police? Thank you. All right, that brings us to unfinished business and an item we're going to get off our table today, one way or another. Financial reporting, a request to delay the disbursements by a week.
Yes, we tabled the request for approval to allow us to hold back payment and collection of funds for distribution by 1 week. Members requested the calendar of payments to determine the actual distribution. That schedule was provided ahead of the meeting, along with a letter to those in the distribution who unfortunately, due to recent budget allocations, will not be receiving payments now until the end of the fiscal year, which starts in July 1st. So that kind of came out as a surprise, especially during the same time that we were discussing the ability to hold back a payment to help us with the balancing out due to the technology and so forth with the machines. And so hopefully this is the type of schedule you were looking for. Basically, initial reports will be pulled from the systems on a Wednesday. Adjustments for reporting due to technical operation or timing and so forth will be completed by that Friday. And then the deposits made and distributions processed will be done on a Tuesday. So it's really, even though there's like five or six that actually get paper checks right now, a week after everybody else because they're not on overnight or wire transfers, it's not going to affect those. It's only going to affect the ones with wire transfers, and it's only going to be for that 1 week period. Now, we have, as I understand it, maybe perhaps Janet can help as well. The way I understand it is when they allocate the distribution of the money for the entire year, and we know we've had some increases, and so they didn't allow for those increases, and therefore that's why we're short of being able to distribute those funds for the last few weeks.
This has happened a few other times. I mean, it's actually a good problem. The problem is revenue forecasting didn't anticipate the amount of money, so they didn't allot for the distribution. So it's not because we don't have cash. The cash exists. It's just that we don't have the authority to pay it.
Correct.
So that problem will fix itself. When it catches people off guard who are expecting a payment, that's really the only issue politically. So.
Absolutely.
Okay. Any questions regarding the request to delay the payments?
So in the schedule, just taking a look at it, still comes out to a 52-week year. The fortunate thing is the first week and the last week is probably portions of a week. And so that's why when I mapped it out for 18 and 19 and 19 to 20, it actually does come out to a 52-week schedule.
And in my mind, how I think of this is the fact that it's delayed doesn't impact the percentage of the payment. It's still 39% of a slightly larger amount because it's delayed one time. But the amount of money over the course of the disbursements is the same. So again, it's a coordination issue. Any questions?
You want a motion?
If we're ready. No questions? Okay.
I'll make a motion to approve the 1 week delay in boarding calculation.
Okay. You have a second?
Second.
All right. Hearing no other discussion, those in favor? That's unanimous.
Thank you.
Get her done. Next item up is the RFPs for financial reviews in the central monitoring system.
Yes, now the financial reviews, unfortunately, we did publish those. There's some communications, I guess, in past submissions. We publicized it before newspapers, and I guess unless you get alerts or you read the newspaper every day, you wouldn't know when the RFPs came out. So we didn't get a response on the initial one, including our current person that we're in contract with. So what we're going to do is we're going to publicize it again, and I'm going to reach out to all those that had submitted prior to, and in any other way, shape, or form that I can get the word out there. Maybe, I don't know, because, you know, there's a whole lot of social medias out there that can be utilized to get the word out. So we'll do the best we can. We'll notify the ones that previously submitted, and then we'll be able to go through the RFP financial review process. This is going to be a turnaround real quick. I've been working with the Department of Procurement, and they've assured us that we've submitted the information. Kathy submitted what they needed, so we're going to get this turned around and advertised very quickly.
Do we have a place on our homepage to also publicize that? Just put an announcement that directs.
Yeah, we do. We do. In fact, we added a news link, and then we also in the rules in rule development area, we also publicize it in there as well. So, yes.
Any questions regarding
just one quick one. So Mac Page has been doing it for a while.
Correct.
How much would we have paid them in the last fiscal year?
I'd have to look it up to see what is actually paid. And keep in mind, I mean, I know there's an expense factor to it, but we do get reimbursed for a lot of their investigations that they do, because that's part of the application process.
I was just wondering how big this review process really is from a financial standpoint.
Guessing it, 80? I'm not.
Well, just like.
I can let you know.
Could be curious of that.
Absolutely.
Any other questions?
And just so I'm clear, but I think anybody can apply, but there has to be a process to show quality of those reviews. Those are important reviews.
Absolutely.
Yes. And Mac Page does a good job, and who knows what else may apply for to do that, but we're gonna make sure that quality is good.
Yeah. Well, once we get all the RFPs in, we do have a committee together. Greg McNeil's part of that, Lieutenant Ireland, there's a couple others. In fact, even Kathleen from DAF, director from DAF, she's the financial portion of our committee. So we have our committee set up for the financial RFPs, for the central site monitoring system RFP, and also the ADW.
But they're all scored based on the qualifications in the RFP, including training and experience.
Yes, absolutely. It's all explained in the RFP how that structure is done.
Yep.
Yep, absolutely.
Any other questions? All right. Hearing none, we're heading towards a short meeting here, so. That brings us to the advanced deposit wagering RFP.
Oh, on the central monitoring system, we did extend the current contract.
Yeah.
The governor approved 6 months, and I originally requested a year, and he approved 6 months. So we're gonna be jumping on this, not that we haven't been, but right now it's in procurement's hands, so I'm gonna be getting with them. I just found this out in like the last 48 hours. So I'll be getting with procurement starting tomorrow, and we're gonna be getting on this, because we've only been allowed 6 months and not till the end of the next fiscal year of the contract.
Okay.
The ADW rules, the final adoption will be effective June 23rd, 2018, and the ADW RFP language, I'm working on that currently to put it into the new format. It's just unfortunately with some work scheduling and vacation time, I wasn't able to put it together for this particular meeting here today, but I will have it for us for July.
Okay. Any questions regarding any of that information? Okay.
Nope.
Seeing none, that brings us to new business. First item up is legislative consideration for remote attendance at meetings. So that's an item I asked to have placed on the agenda. As you know, we've had an issue come up specifically involving Mr. Harmon, but it could be other members as well that have not been able to attend meetings in person because of scheduling and so forth. There's nothing in the law that allows for it. There is law that talks about presence. We received some legal advice from our attorney, and we've hashed through those issues. So what I'd like to do is entertain the idea of asking the Department of Public Safety to submit legislation in the next session to address this issue, to model it after any existing legislation that exists that allows departments, and my understanding is maybe EMS or somebody has that. So Katie might be our go-to person for this. And so I'd like to have the board take a vote directing the Department of Public Safety to do it. January is gonna be a new governor. We don't know who the governor is gonna be, and I'm not sure if the administration would entertain it or not, but if they have a motion coming from the board, I think they'd be more likely to advance the legislation. So that's the issue. Is there anything else either of you would like to discuss or ask questions of?
Nope. I think it makes sense for not just for me personally, but for whole board in terms of not being present or traveling or do whatever, just to be able to. I think it works well, at least both on the recipient end and this end, I believe. So
I agree.
I think it's great.
The world's changing.
Yeah.
And there are many other private sector boards and corporations that allow people who live a considerable distance away to attend remotely. technology allows us to see the people we're talking to and interact, and the only thing that's not the same is you're not physically in the room, but certainly you can see and judge people for what they're having to say and read body language. So I think it makes sense, and if we're ready, I'd entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second?
Yep.
Hearing no other discussion, those in favor? So that's unanimous. That brings us up to an issue involving child support withholding. I'll turn it over to the executive director to explain what's going on with that.
The, actually, Supervisor Gardner and myself have had a couple of conversations in this regard. I don't really know that it's a whole lot of patrons or a whole lot of people, but I'm kind of pro child support and being able to furnish for your family and so forth. And when I hear that somebody who visits a casino quite often, and when they receive a jackpot over $1,200, where they have to fill out a W-2G, or they have to go through the process, and it's found out that they in fact owe child support, and the person won't accept their winnings because of that. I just think it's just something that irks my chain a little bit, because you know this is supporting a child somewhere. And so what I wanted to do was just bring it forth. I did have a little bit of conversation with Ron and Katie to bring it forth and have an open discussion on just where this is at, because I think at this point the jackpots are not being obtained without the proper identification or the information, and so the jackpot, for all intents and purposes, it's my understanding, is being withheld, and it's withheld for I guess a year, and then after that, then it goes back into the system. So like I say, this is not a great number of people, but I just think going forward, this is a big part of our rules, a big part of our statute, and I think if we have a chance to call somebody's bluff, that it might be advantageous, at least of all for the children out there, to be able to be supported by, for lack of a better term, deadbeat fathers.
Or mothers.
Or mothers, yeah.
So just to provide further clarity, if someone wins a jackpot under the $1,200 limit, they're not required to fill out any paperwork, and the facilities are not required to check the database to see if they're in the database as somebody who owes child support.
Correct.
So those winnings are taken and received, but they're making a calculation, or at least some people are, that because I would have to report these winnings, and those winnings would then be turned over and distributed to the kids, they're not claiming them at all.
Correct.
And unclaimed winnings after a year are returned to the facility. That's what's going on.
Is that correct?
I'm sure with our kind of group, I don't believe they are, but
I haven't been here a full year yet, so I'd have to double check that cycle.
I don't believe forfeit accounts.
If it's
they go to the state as unclaimed funds.
Yeah, they go to the state.
Yeah, but you hold it for a year though.
We do.
Okay.
Until the next.
In other words, if I win under normal circumstances, if I win a $5,000 jackpot and I don't have the proper identification in order to fill out the forms, they'll say, all right, we'll hold your jackpot for you. Go home, go wherever it is, go get your identification, proper identification, bring it in, and we'll cash it for the process. That's what they're doing. A person with a child support has full awareness that money is going to be confiscated and redirected, and so they're not given that information.
So in that case, so at the end of the year, it's forfeited winnings come to the state, and the state doesn't have the authority to direct those funds to child support by rule. I guess I'd ask Ron for an opinion.
I think it's maybe a little bit more complicated. And I do realize Section 4 says that if there's winnings that would be subject to tax, then they have to fill out the W-2G. That as you may recall, we've given some guidance to the casinos, because that's not absolutely clear that, for example, that people always have to fill those out. So we've had a discussion. Part of it is I don't quite understand the facts as they exist at the casino level. So we, Katie and I and Milt have talked, we're going, and we'd like to also work with the people from, in the case of the statute, the departments identified as DHS. So we'd like to work with them to figure out what they require. But I would point out that the lien against winnings is in Section 5, and that seems to stand independent. So my view as of right now is that you, the W-2G filing sort of prompts the inquiry to the registration or the registrar, but it doesn't appear that it would be necessary. So if somehow the casino knew the identity of who the winner is, then I think it's possible that there would still be a lien attachable to the winnings. But that's a very preliminary opinion. I need to find out from the casinos exactly what the fact situations are, and then also to have a consultation with the lawyer from DHS, because we agree with the executive director to the extent that the law allows us to recover these monies. And so,
and this became this conversation, I think, was a little bit similar to the person who self-excluded, or we had that discussion about the person being self-excluded coming into the facility, winning a $1,500 jackpot, but not actually receiving it. Therefore, there's not the need for the W-2 because she didn't actually have possession of it, and that would have been reported as casino winnings, when in fact she never actually handled the winnings. So the same thing would be here if we want to look at it that way. It would be similar to that in the fact that the person wins a $1,500 jackpot, okay, and and he's not actually receiving the jackpot because we're taking it and it's going towards his child support. So maybe the W-2G is not effectively needed to be filled out because he's not actually taking possession of the money. But do we have the ability to, in the same instance as a self-excluded person in this particular case, to say, okay, this money is going to that child support?
Yeah, and I haven't fully researched that. The excluded person one is fairly clear. The bottom of the W-2G says that the person has to have had control over the funds, and in that case, they never actually received the funds. In this case, a child support obligation is a debt, so that I haven't quite figured that out yet, and the money is being used to pay a debt, and I'm pretty sure now, under the IRS regulations, the payment of debt is considered income, so it may still require a W-2G. I haven't been smart enough to figure that out yet, but I'm gonna look into that. So there's a lot to be, this is an important issue. We are going to, we learned about it, I think it was last week, and we're going to pursue and hopefully provide information to the executive director who could then report follow-up with the board.
Right. Are there any questions? It sounds like we don't have enough information to make a decision. But I believe the sense of the board, and they can shake their head yes or no if I'm right or wrong, is that the board would like to see these monies directed to child support, if at all possible. If we can identify the children involved or the person who has child support debt and direct it as spelled out by rule, we'd like to do that. If we can't, then let's figure out what we can do or what we'd have to do to modify to allow this. Sounds like discussions needed with DHS and the facilities and others, so.
And I honestly, I didn't expect to get a resolution today.
Right.
I just wanted to get the conversation started because I knew there was going to be some more looking into or some more backup.
Yeah. So. Is that the sense of each of you?
Yeah. I would agree with what we're trying to do. I would just point out, when you're talking about those W-2Gs, I think the mere fact that a winner decides not to take the money, that doesn't preclude a taxable account.
I would agree. The only potential problem, and I guess I'll lay it out here, is A licensee, meaning the casino, shall electronically access the registry in accordance with this subsection. So it's not, is it, I'm trying to figure out, does it really mean that the casinos can't access the registry unless they are endeavoring to fill out a W-2G? I mean, if you look at the plain language of it, someone may read it that way, and I need to further look at that. I mean, because if they could access the registry without the need of filing a W-2G, then I think this would be a little bit easier type of enforcement.
Just one other quick thought, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned that if someone who wins a jackpot elects not to take it, is that excluded from the calculation of winnings?
It's, to my knowledge, it's withheld for a year, and if it's not claimed, then it goes back into
the revenue calculation. Right, but in terms of reporting from the record.
The law requires them to hold it as unclaimed for 365 days.
Right, and then after that, it has to go back into the revenue calculation, right?
I don't know where it goes.
All right, let's talk about the parties involved and come to the board with options.
I think the street laws requires that money to go to the state of Maine.
Yeah.
But I just want to make sure that those are still counted as winnings on the casino reporting purposes. That's the point.
Right.
Well, yeah. I think the parimutuel statutes also have a similar mechanism, so that may be of some help.
Okay, I think we've got the conversation going, and I look forward to you guys addressing this and reporting back in July. All right. We can keep the conversation to this one here. There'll be plenty of time to talk about it. Thank you. So that brings us to public comment. Is there anybody that would like to comment to the board or address the board in any fashion?
Somewhat disappointing that the ADW RFP is delayed another month. You know, we're in a situation where out-of-state companies are illegally taking wages from the state of Maine, and another month delay is killing us. So that's all I want to say. It's just disappointing. From an industry point of view, we just need to move forward. At some point, I hope it's addressed about the companies that are illegally taking wages from Maine. And at some point, there are statutes that should be addressed. If we don't address that, and ADW gets up and running, we're not going to be able to compete with the Twin Spires of the world. It's not going to happen. So hopefully that issue will be addressed as well.
Okay. Any other comments? All right. Hearing none, that brings us to the next meeting date. We're scheduled for July 17th. I have a conflict on July 17th, and not that the board can't meet without me. But my suggestion after talking to Milt, Kathy, and Ron is that if we delayed that meeting to the following week, the 24th, that would allow more time for the RFP issue to get fleshed out, allow us to meet in July. My intent would then be to skip the August meeting. That's sort of been my policy since being chair. If the casinos have something that is important or there's another issue to come forward in August that needs to be addressed, you know, the board would certainly entertain meeting in order to accomplish the workload that needs to be done. But I think that meeting July 24th and skipping August tees us up for getting everything we need to accomplish in September. So.
That's a Tuesday, right, the 24th?
That's just 1 week delay, same time, same place. The other option would be to keep the date and know that I won't be here. Unless the two of you both outrule me, outrank me.
I have no reason to realize why the 24th would work
okay.
For me.
Okay. So that makes three of us that are okay with the 24th. So our next meeting will be July 24th at 9 o'clock here in this room. Again, the intent is, and I want to publicly say that we intend to take August off. If there's issue with that, bring it forward to the executive director. He'll get a hold of me and we'll talk about whether or not the issue can wait until September or not. So with that, is there anything else, Mr. Champion?
That's it.
Anything else from the board? Ron, Kate? All right, hearing none, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Those in favor? We stand adjourned.
Okay. Wow.
We have to, it's getting early.
Good job, 28 minutes.
It's not the longest, shortest one.
The shorter one?
We did 19.
Yeah, we weren't planning to stay with Josh anyways, right?
No, unless you need me here.
Yeah, I don't.
Let's see.
Elena.
No, it's 2 hours, so it's.
That was, it was not like a non-event.
I know, usually they're like a couple hours long, so.
Is this for us too?
We're gonna have an negotiation at 10:30.
That's.
What you're doing, you want money for that?
That's right. It's been my theory all my life.
Get ready.
No, I mean, I'm not.
All right.
I just wanted to be like.
Chief Barbara.
Thank you.
Well, you can.
Working it on. The gentleman that.
Yeah, no, you can submit while. Well, but we'll do is pick the opportunity.
Barbarino.
Sure.
While we're waiting.
Barbarino.
Should I come back, or?
No, you can, can hang out, because they're here. They're just waiting for someone else.
For their turn, right? He's a regular.
So.
So what I'm gonna bring forward is two positions coming.